Well, China has long loomed large in Australian foreign affairs, but the superpower's role in our domestic politics is dominating news headlines at the moment. There have been calls for opposition leader Bill Shorten to force Senator Sam Dastyari out of the Labor Party because of his links to Chinese political donor Huang Zhengmo. Yesterday, it emerged that the Labor senator had allegedly pressured the deputy leader of the Labor Party, Tanya Plibersek, not to even meet with a pro-democracy leader in Hong Kong. Well, the Dastyari saga has raised wider questions about exactly how deep the links go between Australian politicians and China. Last week, the federal government announced a sweeping package of proposed laws to curb foreign influence and interference. Louisa Lim is a senior lecturer at the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne. She's written about censorship under President Xi Jinping and about the role of the Confucius Institute in Australia in peddling Chinese influence. She's also a formerly China-based journalist. Louisa Lim, welcome to Summer Breakfast.
Good morning, Hamish.
Over the course of this year, there have been plenty of these stories. You've been involved in reporting some of them, suggesting this widespread and sophisticated Chinese influence peddling in Australian politics, as well as academia and business. In your view, just how widespread is this practice?
Well, it seems to be quite wide-ranging, but it's hard to know how deep the Chinese influence is. But we are seeing it across a number of sectors. I mean, in politics, of course, this is playing out right now. But we're also seeing it in the media, where most of the Chinese language media outlets in Australia, almost all of them have been bought up by pro-Beijing organisations. So what you're seeing is news in Australia in the Chinese language, which is almost uniformly sort of pro-Beijing. And we're also seeing an increasing influence in the Western media as well. And then a lot of our reporting has been on the these partnerships that educational institutions have had with Chinese partners and how these have been used to project influence inside these institutions in Australia.
So what are the main organizations that are used by the Chinese Communist Party to do that?
Well, inside educational institutions, I mean, we're seeing this really interesting case, which we were reporting on last week, of a Confucius Institute, which was set up inside the Department of Education in New South Wales. So it's the first time in the world that a Confucius Institute has been set up in an institution which it's not a university, it's not a school, it's a government department. And Confucius Institutes are very interesting. They're language teaching bodies which are funded by the Chinese state, and they've become part of its attempts to project influence overseas, really by teaching Beijing's accepted version of history and culture. And in this case, in New South Wales that we've seen, there are four positions. What's interesting is that two of them are funded by the New South Wales state government, and the other two are funded by these Chinese partners. So what you're seeing is, you know, it amounts to really Chinese government-funded personnel within an Australian state government, which many experts that we spoke to said was unacceptable and quite a scandal.
So why is it so insidious in your view?
Well, one reason is that if you start looking at the fine print of these kind of in this particular case, if you look at the fine print of the agreement, it says that the Confucius Institute is obliged to report its annual projects, its accounts back to Beijing for examination and approval. So that would, you know, it would seem that would give Chinese government bodies potential veto power over work done within the Australian government, which would be setting a very extraordinary precedent.
I know whenever we report these stories, you get pretty polarised sets of opinions around it. And there are those that feel there's a degree of xenophobia driving a lot of the narrative around China in Australia at the moment, that there's just this kind of historic and deep-seated cultural fear of China. Do you think there is a component of that in the way we perceive a lot of this stuff? Because it's not entirely unusual for other countries to try and influence things that happen here in Australia.
I mean, I think this is something that the Chinese government has really used in their response to all these headlines that we've been seeing. And of course, you know, I should point out that the vast majority of Chinese people in Australia and Chinese Australians are not, you know, have nothing to do with these organizations, that what we're talking about is Communist Party influence in Australia rather than, you know, Chinese influence more widely. But I think it's really interesting the way in which we are seeing this narrative being echoed. I mean, Beijing is really playing the race card, isn't it? It's in these statements that we've seen coming out of the People's Daily yesterday and the Chinese embassy in Canberra. They're accusing the Australian press of hysterical paranoia, racist overtones, and saying it's a slander on Chinese students. But they're not actually, in many cases, addressing the actual allegations.
Mm. But in saying all of that, is this partly about perception, in that we are, in some respects, drawing a line between China and the Chinese Communist Party, and that that's a line that the Chinese government doesn't necessarily see? I mean, you know, for many within the Chinese leadership, the Chinese Communist Party is China.
That's right. I mean, the Chinese Communist Party has long tried to sort of foster this idea that to be anti-party is to be anti-China. And I mean, I think that's why these kind of arguments are quite useful to it. But at the same time, I think it's important that within Australia, there is a discussion about these agreements and about the kind of influence there is. Because, you know, to have it laid out on the table, to have that transparent discussion about the level of Chinese involvement, this isn't a case of racism. It's just a case of, you know, transparent administration, isn't it?
And what's your view of the position taken by the Australian Prime Minister earlier this week? It was a surprisingly strong slapdown of China. The language he used, he spoke in Mandarin, used historic Chinese terminology. How effective do you think that is, and what are the repercussions for us?
Yes, it was an interesting move to hear Malcolm Turnbull speaking in Mandarin. And I mean, some Chinese experts have kind of picked holes with his words. They've said that Chairman Mao did say those words, but not at the time that Malcolm Turnbull claimed that he did. So some claim, you know, think that it could have backfired. And I think that within China, the official response is likely to be very unhappy. You know, Chairman Mao's motive was always making the foreign serve China, and yet we're seeing Malcolm Turnbull do the opposite, using Chairman Mao's words against China. So I think we are likely to see more angry rhetoric of the kind that we've seen over the last few days emerging from Beijing.
All right, Louisa Lim, we'll have to leave it there. We're very grateful to you for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Louisa Lim, Senior Lecturer at the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne. She's also the author of The People's Republic of Amnesia.